So there's still this question, does political momentum actually exist? And if it does, how does it operate? Columbia University sociologist Duncan Watts has spent years examining how trends propagate, and he's developed some groundbreaking ideas that are upsetting the traditional ways we've understood trends in marketing. Hi, Duncan.
Hi.
Thank you for being here. So I'd like to start by looking at Obama's so-called momentum as a way to understand the work you do. What does it mean to you when people say Obama has the big mo?
Well, so there's some you know, almost ancient social psychology experiments going back to the 1950s where a psychologist got a room full of people and they set up this sort of fake scenario where someone would be in a position of being asked a question. The famous example is, which of the lines on the right of this slide looks like the lines on the left? And everyone else in the room was primed to give a false answer. And what these results, what these experiments showed, is that people can be, manipulated by their observations of what other people think in ways that are completely beneath their level of consciousness. So they think they're making a rational decision about what the right answer is, but in fact they're just following the herd. And so if you look at the way that the Democratic primaries and the Republican primaries are set up with this sort of sequence of votes, starting out with the very small states like Iowa and New Hampshire, the signals that those early votes can send can build this what we call a cascade where everyone later on in the process just sort of rubber stamps the votes of people at the beginning. And
which is why this is so confusing, because, of course, Obama won Iowa and Hillary won New Hampshire.
Yeah, so when the votes are split between these first two, then it's ambiguous, and so you need to sort of go to subsequent rounds. And usually that happens fairly quickly. Usually, in the next round, somebody gets an advantage, and then that's what we saw with Howard Dean and John Kerry last time. But this time it's been, and I think it sort of speaks to the level of engagement that voters have with these two candidates, that they're sort of acting a little more independently. And up until Super Tuesday, I was sort of scratching my head saying, when is the cascade going to start?
Yeah.
And maybe that's what's happening now.
Did you say it started?
Maybe
yeah.
That's what's happening now.
I wonder, in hearing your description of this, if it would be, for lack of a better word, more fair to have a primary where everyone votes on the same day, so no one's sort of influenced.
Right.
Unless maybe influence is a good thing.
Well, so it depends what you're trying to accomplish. If you're trying to get a representative sample of the population preferences, then you would absolutely have all the primaries on the same day. And then no one would have any of this. I mean, of course, there'd still be the media and everything, but nobody would have any signals to work off, and everyone would just have to vote their conscience. If the objective is to get a candidate who looks like a unanimous candidate, then the sequential primaries is actually a great design. So, this has sort of been a problem with the current set of primaries, is that if somebody doesn't get the cascade rolling soon, we're going to get to the very end and there's going to be a bit of struggle, and whoever wins isn't going to seem like an inevitable contender.
Yeah. And this leads to your general research, which is that everyone knows this idea of 6 degrees of separation and how you replicated that experiment and drew some different conclusions.
So the same. So of course, this is now a sort of a very common piece of knowledge or belief, at least, that everyone in the world is connected through their social networks to everyone else through some short chain of intermediaries. So I know someone who knows someone who knows someone who knows anyone in the world. This is an idea that's been around for many years in popular culture. It's also been around for many years in social science. And since the 1960s, people have been doing experiments to try to demonstrate this phenomenon. And one of the early experiments was conducted by Stanley Milgram, the famous social psychologist. And he, was the one who really came up with the result that the typical length of these message chains that he observed was about 6 degrees long. And that's presumably where the phrase came from. But he also found another result, which is that of the messages that ended up getting delivered to the target person that he picked, about a quarter of them came through one of two acquaintances of this target. And Milgram drew the conclusion, the obvious conclusion, that the way this process works the way that that people get connected to each other through their social networks is because of these very highly connected hubs. So it's sort of like the airline network, that if you're trying to get from, you know, Ithaca, New York to, you know, the town that I grew up in Australia, Toowoomba in Queensland, which is another inconsequential town in the middle of nowhere, the first thing you do is get on a small airplane and fly to the nearest hub. So you go to LaGuardia or to JFK, and then you, you know, hop from hub to hub, and you finally get off in Sydney, and then you fly via a small airplane. And so because that's how we build networks when we want to move things around the place, our intuition is that that's how human networks work as well. And this is very consistent with the idea of there have always been sort of special individuals who kind of make everything happen. But the reality is that social networks are not built like airline networks. You know, Chicago O'Hare is not just better connected than your average airport. You know, it's 1,000 times better connected. Whereas, you know, the person who you think of as being sort of super social and having lots of friends maybe has twice as many friends as you do. So that's a big difference, but it's not 1,000 times the difference.
So this must sort of upset marketers, because now they don't know whom to target.
Yeah, this is not a message that marketers are overly joyful about, you know, because, you know, the way we learn about the world is always sort of by experience, always in this kind of after-the-fact sense. And yet what we want is knowledge that we can apply in a perspective sense. We want to be able to say, look, you know, whenever something big happened, there were always a few people that started it. If those few people always shared certain characteristics, we could go and find people like that and they would start the next thing. But, you know, actually, when people try to do that, it doesn't tend to work very well.
Does that mean you're sort of ruining a bunch of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon games?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, I've done a lot of work on this problem actually, and it's perfectly possible to connect
Kevin Bacon to anyone.
Well, to connect anyone to anyone. Kevin Bacon actually also turns out to be a bit of an historical artifact that you know, the fraternity brothers who thought of this idea that everyone could be connected to Kevin Bacon just sort of picked him out at random, and it seemed such an unlikely thing back then, because he wasn't a very well-known actor at the time, that they were very surprised to find that everyone could be connected to him in such a short series of steps. But the irony is that if they'd picked anyone else, literally any other actor you can think of, and in fact, just about any other actor that you can't think of, they would have found exactly the same result. So Kevin Bacon has been the unwitting beneficiary of this sort of minor statistical fluke.
Thank you very much for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
Duncan Watts is a sociologist at Columbia University. For more about him, visit our website, morefairgame.org.